You are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops, on hoopfeed.com.
Hey everybody, this is David Siegel, hosting Dishin' and Swishin's weekly podcast on hoopfeed.com. And as we have hit the break for the WNBA season, it's time to talk a little bit about the Olympics. And I'm pleased to have with me AP correspondent Doug Feinberg, who will be in London watching the Olympics and covering for the AP. How you doing, Doug?
Pretty good, Dave. Thanks.
Doug, so first of all, going to London and covering this has to be, you know, really one of the pinnacle moments in your career.
It definitely is. I had the pleasure of covering my first Olympics in Beijing in 2008, and that was a phenomenal, phenomenal time. I mean, I got to see one of, I think, the premier sporting events there are out there. I mean, you can say the Super Bowl, you can say the Final Four, you can say the NBA Finals. Whatever you want to say is a great sporting event. Imagine that factor of 17, because there's 17 days of the Olympics, and that's what that is. It's the Super Bowl every single day for 17 days in 50 different sports. So that, to me, is something really, really special. And seeing the pride that these players have, I mean, some of these players are best friends on different teams, but once they put on that uniform representing their country, it just brings it up to another level. And the basketball, I mean, the U.S. ran through the Olympics in 2008, as they've done most of the Olympics, by 35, 40 points a game. So I'd be lying if I said I haven't seen better basketball per se, but just the atmosphere and having so many screaming fans and such, it was really, I mean, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And I have to say, if you have a chance to go to an Olympics and it's like, you know, do I want to do it? Do I not want to do it? Go. If you have a chance to do it, that's something I would say should be on everybody's bucket list.
In addition to covering the women's games, now, do you get a chance to go out and see a bunch of things? Will you be covering anything else for AP, or do you just get to browse and have fun?
Well, I don't know if I should say this because it just gets me in trouble down the road with everybody. Like, wow, you have the best job in the world. But in 2008, basically, here's the way my schedule works. I'm in the gym for 14 hours a day every other day. So, say, Saturday, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I'm in the gym covering every game. There's six games a day from 8 in the morning till about 1 in the morning. And then the other days I go to practice for an hour, cover practice, write a story, and the rest of my day is somewhat free. So in 2008, I had the pleasure of going to the track because I enjoy watching track and field. It's a great sport. It's a lot of fun. And I happened to catch all three of Usain Bolt's world records, the 100, the 200, and the 4x1. So I have the opportunity to actually walk around and see other events and just experience the Olympics outside of just being in a gym where I could be in New York City or Connecticut or wherever, and you're in a gym. But the other days I have the chance and the pleasure of going out and experiencing it, and as I said, there's nothing like it. I mean, I saw table tennis in 2008 was, I mean, phenomenal to see two of the best in the world who happen to be Chinese in front of 20,000 screaming Chinese fans in an event that most people don't really play except maybe when they're in college, when they're having a fun Friday night or Saturday night. It's, I mean, I would never go and watch a table tennis match again because there's nothing to top that. So I have the pleasure and the ability to go out and watch other events, and I definitely admit I take full advantage of it.
Well, that's fantastic. And now that we all hate you, let's get back to basketball, since you do have the best job in the world, as you said, at least for those couple weeks.
Yes.
Now, just to make sure people understand, there are 12 teams that qualify for women's basketball. They're divided into Group A and Group B. They play each other in pool play, and then the top four teams in each group advance to the quarterfinals. The top two teams in each group advance to the semifinals. Now, Group A has the United States in it, and the other teams in it are Angola, China, Croatia, the Czech Republic, and Turkey. None of those names really instill the huge fear of God in you. And then in Group B, though, there is Australia, Russia, Brazil, Canada, France, and Great Britain. That is clearly the much more difficult group on paper. And I'm sure that it will be on the court, the much more difficult group. So let's start a little bit. Let's talk about the United States team first and foremost. And the question that I have to ask first and get it out of the way is the whole incident that's going on, the lawsuit involving the NBA and USA Basketball and Coach Gino Auriemma, do you anticipate any kind of effects on the USA team with this going on?
Dave, I've talked to a couple of players about it, and they're professionals, and that's something that's important in this world, to know that they are professionals, and half of them have played for Coach Auriemma, and they all say the same thing. You have one goal in mind, and that's winning a gold medal, and nothing matters from that. And I have to believe them. I mean, they've been through a lot of things in their lives. They're all grown women. They understand how things work. Their one goal is to win a gold medal, and nothing will distract them from that. And I would think, based on past success, nothing will take away from that, and they'll reach that goal. But they all say the same thing. I mean, it's in the background. They don't really think it will affect them at all. If they go out and play basketball on the court, that's what matters. Play for 40 minutes and have success.
And that's, as you said, that's what you would expect from professionals like that. Auriemma has been through enough time things in his career that it won't affect him, I'm sure. And I think that this will all really come to surface well after the Olympics and not have any impact on it as well. Except for the commentators bringing it up, I'm sure, several times during the Olympics at inappropriate moments. But that's the way it is on network television, unfortunately. Now, another question that has come up, especially in light of some of the performances that have gone on during the WNBA season, is people have questioned the fact that the United States team was selected so early and announced, and some of the players aren't having as good a year as some of their counterparts. You know, what do you think? Was it a mistake to try and take these players as early as it was, or was that extra time in May that important to this team?
Well, that's the one Achilles heel of the U.S., in the sense that they don't have the practice time that other countries have. And they had no choice but to practice the 3 days in May they were in Seattle when they played China and scrimmaged Japan, because the entire roster was playing the WNBA from May 14th, whatever it was, through the Olympic break on July 14th. So it'd be tough. I mean, they did in 2008. I think they named the team a little bit later. But it would be tough to, unless they change the format and the WNBA decides to take a four-month break at the start of the season to let them practice a little bit together, I don't think there's a way around it. I mean, sure, Kara Lawson's had an incredible start of the WNBA season. She was one of the probably final players that was on the roster cuts. She's probably one of the top alternates they have if somebody's hurt or somebody gets hurt in the next week or so. But I think at the time they had, they had to name the team that they did. And they've all said, I mean, I was out in Seattle with them, they think this might be the most dominant team they've had. They won four straight gold medals by an average of 35 points a game. That says a lot. I mean, that this team is top to bottom. There aren't many weak links. There usually aren't on these U.S. roster teams. There's probably, I mean, you've seen enough WNBA games. There's probably 12, 20, 25 more girls you could put on team that would do pretty well and have a chance to medal at the Olympics if they played for the U.S. So it's tough to say that, yeah, you could probably have a few names out there right now. If you made a roster right now, the top 12 players who are eligible to play for the United States would be the same 12 that is going over to London? Probably not. Will this 12 do really well? I would think so.
Yeah, the other thing that people sometimes don't realize, though, is success in the WNBA doesn't necessarily equate to success in an international play as well. And, you know, for example, one of the people that gets talked about, as she was the last player added to the team, was Asia Jones, who's struggling a little bit this season. You know, but people are forgetting already that this was the EuroLeague playoff MVP, you know, at the end of the season. So there is no reason to think that she wouldn't be a strong performer in international play again in the Olympics.
And the other thing that's very, very important, and in 2008, Kara was so good knowing her role. You can't have a team of the 12 best players and have 12 egos and expect maybe that the 12th man who thinks they should be playing more than they are is going to be happy about that. And Asia Jones, she had an incredible, as you said, EuroLeague season, and she's played for Auriemma, knows his system, and probably is content and happy to be on the team, have a chance to win a gold medal in the twilight of her career. So you need the right mix of people that 9, 10, 11, 12, who may not get that playing time that they think they deserve, although most games are blowouts anyway, that they're going to be okay. They're not going to be there to ruffle feathers or step in and say, why am I not getting this? Why am I not playing when I should be? That you need that right mix there. So it's not always the best 12 players that you want to have on the team. It's the best 12 that will fit together to make the best team.
And the other thing that you look at this U.S. team now, and the one thing that jumps out at you is, I recall it wasn't that long ago that Yolanda Griffith was added at the last minute because there was no centers on this on Team USA. And now you look, and this is one of the most dominant post teams ever assembled with Fowles and Charles and Parker and, you know, and imagine if Griner had said yes, too. I mean, the post game in the United States is going to be exceptional.
Oh, yeah, and you named probably three of the top MVP candidates right now, I think the WNBA in the first half of the season, in Fowles, Charles, and Parker, who have been unbelievable. And they're also dynamic. I mean, Team Charles is, what, Miss Double-Double? She's, like, set the WNBA record already with, I think, what, 55 in her young career. Fowles is a tremendous post-up player, a great shot blocker, just a force down low. And Parker can play 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. I mean, she has the skills of a guard and the body of a big girl. She's unbelievable handling the ball. She's great court vision. She can drive to the basket, and she can hit the three-pointer. So good luck guarding that if you're the opposing center from another team trying to figure out, okay, how am I going to match up with both Charles and Fowles or Charles, Fowles, and Parker or Fowles and Parker? And, yeah, the 6'8" girl from Baylor, Brittany Griner, was on this team. Wow, that would be something to watch. So four of them, you could probably play all four at once somehow. I'm sure Gino would figure out a way, and that would be tough to match up against.
Well, the other thing that's kind of hovered over the head of the USA team a little bit, and especially as it's impacted some of the WNBA play in ways, is the injury and the sitting out factor. Now, there's already been games. Taurasi, of course, everybody knows, has sat out basically the entire season so far, making sure that her hip is okay. Bird sat out in a game this week. Parker has sat out games. McCautry has sat out games. You know, it seems that people are being very careful, making sure that these players are ready for the Olympics, even at the cost of games for their own teams. You know, that's something where I don't know what's the right approach to take to that, but it certainly seems that they've been extra careful, and I would anticipate that even someone like a Taurasi is going to be about as healthy as they could possibly be for a player playing year-round in women's basketball for these Olympics.
Yeah, I think it's a tough situation for every team, the WNBA in general. It's what do you do? Let's say that Taurasi really was badly hurt and couldn't play in the Olympics. That doesn't help women's basketball. Same thing if Angel McCutcheon was hurt. It's not good that Penny Taylor is missing the entire season for an ACL injury. She's one of the top players in the WNBA. She's one of the best players for Australia. She's one of the best players in the world. So I think you're right. I think teams are being extra cautious right now, maybe giving the person the benefit of the doubt. If, you know, if they're 50-50 tonight, let's let them rest for the night. We're not going to kill ourselves right now and potentially risk losing somebody for the Olympics or beyond when there's the stretch run, when potentially everyone's back. And I think it's an interesting year, David, with all the potential college kids who are going to be seniors next year, and this is new, everyone's saying one of the best drafts ever, at least top heavy wise with Griner, Deladon, and Diggins, that, you know what, it's not so bad if you finish in second to last or last in the conference. Yeah, we missed the playoffs, but we can have a heck of a team next year if we get the right draft pick, and you add a Brittany Griner to Phoenix. So next year Phoenix has Griner, Taurasi, Taylor, Bonner, Prahalis. Who am I missing here? I mean, that's a pretty good team you could have. With you know what, they don't make the playoffs this year, but wow, that's a heck of a team. Or Seattle, when Lauren Jackson comes back, if you add Griner or Della onto that team, good luck beating them next year.
So it's definitely going to be created, as you said, that odd situation. But you know, I do think that we will see everybody, at least on the United States team, in pretty reasonably good health. Now, looking at the rest of their group, it's clear that the Czech Republic is the second best team, at least on paper, in that group, and probably the team that will advance to the semifinals as well.
I would think so. I mean, on paper, you said before, Who was the world champion in 2010? The United States. Who was the runner-up? Wasn't Australia. Wasn't Russia. It was the Czech Republic. So potentially the two top teams returning from the last world stage event are in the same group with the U.S. and the Czech Republic. As I said before, playing in front of your home crowd and the international scene is one huge advantage. And the Czech Republic did a great job hosting in 2010 in the World Championships, and they definitely benefited from having their home crowd supporting them. They have some pretty talented players. Hanna Hornikova is a really, really talented guard who can shoot the lights out. And Ava Vichakova also is another talented guard who can shoot the lights out. Do they have enough to beat the United States? Probably not. But I think you're right. I think they're the team that probably will be the second seed in that group who could be really, really a trouble for an Australia or a Russia or whoever is the other semifinalist in London in a couple weeks.
You will note, by the way, that I am letting Doug pronounce all these names, that as far as I'm concerned, the Czech Republic team is Jana Vesela and a lot of people whose last names end in Ova.
Vesela's pretty good, too. I mean, they're a talented group. They were a team that I think surprised people in 2010 that are now on the radar that are not going to be surprising some of these teams as much. But I think, Dave, something that's interesting that I noticed internationally, which you don't really see in the WNBA, is I think sandbagging is the right word. Teams tend to, in these tournaments, try to get themselves set up nicely for the quarterfinals and semifinals so that they can avoid the United States, so they can avoid playing Australia until as late as they can. And you see teams actually rest players that you were saying in the WNBA how maybe Taurasi took a night off or has been missing the whole season lately and Bird missed the game the other night. They take players out knowing that a loss does them more good than a win. And I'm a competitive person myself. I could never see not throwing a game but not playing my best game just so to get a loss helps me more than a win. That's what some of these teams do in these international tournaments, which when I first saw it, I was like, no way, that's unbelievable. But teams do that to try to get that better seed and not have to face a team like the U.S. until the finals.
Interesting. Is there anybody else in Group A that jumps out at you that we should be discussing? Any other teams or any other particular talents that people should be looking for?
Well, China's an interesting team. They were obviously a team that was on the rise at the last Olympics. They were hosting. Obviously, they're trying to make a run for it. They lost in the bronze medal game to Russia. They have a mixture of young and old talent. They have a 6'6" center, Nan Chen, who has been around forever, who is a pretty talented player. She's got great moves in the post, about a 15-foot jumper, so she's pretty good. They have a guard who's been there forever, Miao, who's really, really talented, handles the ball well, a little bit flashy. And they have a 6'9" girl, Wei Wei, who's probably about 18 years old, who, when the U.S. played them in Seattle about 2 months ago, was unstoppable early on playing at the U.S. posts. But she's 2 months older now, a little more experienced, and she's 6'9". So it's tough to play against someone 6'9" who can block shots and such and alter shots. So I think China's a team that, again, I don't think is going to beat the U.S. They might be able to beat the Czech Republic. You never know. But that's a team that's in the past been decent. And then Turkey's got an American on it, Hollingsworth, who played at Virginia Commonwealth, is one of their stars. So there's another name out there that, again, Turkey may not be a team that's going to advance very far, but at least people know one of their players on the roster.
You know, this naturalization thing just cracks me up. I got to admit, it still strikes me as so odd when you get things like that. You know, obviously it exploded in 2008 with Becky Hammon playing with Russia, and so many people were bent out of shape over it. You know, but now you get, you know, Kenicha Hollingsworth playing for Turkey, as you said.
Turkey. Yep.
You know, it's just bizarre the way that it works out. But, hey, that's the way it works. So, you know, that's the way it's going to be.
Well, since you mentioned her, Becky Hammon, or as they called her in 2008, Hammonova, is playing for Russia again. And I talked to her a couple months ago when I was up in Connecticut, and she was there. She confirmed she's playing for them. And she's just happy she can be a nameless person this time around and not have the big brouhaha that happened in 2008 when she first came out to play for Russia. some people called her a traitor and just a lot of things that weren't appropriate and weren't right. And she's just happy for a chance to hopefully go out there and just play and not have any pressure, not have anything be like she's playing for the other team. There's no Cold War anymore. But it's going to be interesting to see her play again for Russia. She played for them in the 2010 World Championships. She played for them in the 2008 Olympics, and she got a bronze medal. She's hoping for another medal again when they play in 2 weeks.
Well, let's cut over, since we've started with Russia, let's cut over to Group B and start there. And obviously, you know, Becky's going to have to play big this year. Not as big as Maria Stepanova would, but obviously the injury to you, the Russian Barbie, is going to be a big liability for that team.
It is, and it's sad because you hate seeing people hurt. No one wants to win a tournament or a game because the other team's missing their best players. And Maria Stepanova has been the Russian Barbie, the face of the Russian women's basketball program for the last, 16 years, 12 years, however long it's been. And she tore her ACL at the Euros last fall, and she's obviously not going to be playing because of the ACL injury, but they're still pretty loaded. I mean, they're really good. They're talented at the guard spot. Alana Korsten is pretty good. Obviously, Hammond's the one who's going to be interesting to watch how she fits in with all of her Russian teammates. So she plays with in the winter, obviously. So she knows all of them already. It's not like she's just joining the team and, hey, go play with these new players. But they have a girl who's really, really good. Elena Delachikona is really, really talented. She was, I think, the MVP of last year when they won or they got the bid to the Olympics. She's a talented guard who can shoot. So they have some talent. Even though they lost the big Russian and Barbie doll in the middle and Stepanova, they're going to be good. And they're coming off a really disappointing finish in the World Championships 2 years ago. So they're going to be hungry. They have a new coach in Boris who's been pretty good for them over the last couple of years, getting them primed and ready for this. So they're a team that, you know, with Australia not at full strength, they might be able to win that bracket and potentially meet the U.S. in the gold medal game.
Yeah, and they've always had, besides Stepanova, they've also had other strong posts. So that's going to continue. You know, they will obviously miss out on Stepanova, but, you know, you're absolutely right. This is not a team that people should expect just because she's injured to not be a strong contender to, you know, be a potential silver medalist. And, of course, you already gave us the perfect segue into talking about the team that will be favored to win the silver medal, and that's Australia. And they, you know, are missing perhaps the best all-around player in the world.
Yeah, they're what? They're the bridesmaids every time. They've won three straight silver medals, losing to the U.S. in the gold medal game. It's sad. I mean, this is probably their best chance they would have had to be competitive with the U.S. and maybe knock them off on a really, really good day, which – maybe they play 100 times, maybe they win a couple of them. Because Lauren Jackson's, I would say, in her prime and probably is going to start on the downslope as far as the Olympics go over the next couple ones. And they have Elizabeth Cambage, who is obviously a young budding star there, who's their main post player to go with Jackson. So they have a 6'6" and 6'8" girl in the middle, which is pretty tough to compete against. They could match up with the U.S.'s size. And then you have Penny Taylor, who, as you said, is probably one of the best all-around players in the world. But with her out with the injury, she's not there. So they have to find other people to step up. And I think they have a few. And Jenna O'Hay is pretty good. And Abby Bishop and Christy Howard is a really good guard who seems to give Sue Bird fits every time they play. But Bird tends to get the better of her as far as winning the games. But they're good. I mean, they're talented. They were a disappointing team again in the World Championship, so they didn't make the medal rounds, and it was sad for them. But they've been training together. The first time I think that Jackson missed the entire WNBA start of the season to train with Australia. So they're focused on trying to get back to the gold medal game and knock off the U.S. finally and stop being a bridesmaid. Those two teams, I mean, Russia and Australia is going to be the game of the tournament in the group preliminary play. It's, you can call it the battle to not play the U.S. till the gold medal game, because the winner of that group will not see the U.S. until the finals. And assuming they get there. And that's a pretty important thing to have, that if you know you're in the semifinals right now and you don't have to play the United States, you have a chance to get the gold medal game. That's a huge, huge thing, I would think.
So when Australia and Russia play against each other, you're going to see the 7th through 12th player playing for both teams.
Yeah, it should be good. I'm looking forward to that game. If you got to see what game I'm looking forward to most in the tournament, in the Olympics, not including the gold medal game and that sort of stuff, and not obviously watching the U.S. play is always cool, but that Australia-Russia game is going to be something. I mean, that's going to be the opposite of what I was saying before about how teams sandbag, not trying to not win games. That's going to be for all the marbles. That's when there's going to be blood on the floor, leave everything on the court, do what you can, and Australia-Russia for the number one seed in the Group B.
The one thing I can't let go past in talking about Australia was I still can't quite grasp how the Australian team supposedly okayed Aaron Phillips to just go for those couple weeks and play in the WNBA season and then did not select a player who is clearly making an impact in the WNBA this year and has clearly shown that she has some wonderful skills that can help this team, not adding her to this team. I just still can't get that, why you would choose to, quote-unquote, punish somebody for not making the, quote, the commitment of being there through the whole preseason.
That's a very, very good question, and I don't have a good answer for it. I think you're 100% right. You're punishing a person for still playing basketball. It's not like she said, hey, I want to go do a fashion show or I want to go do something not related to basketball. I want to go play basketball. And to not take her, she's been a big part of their success the last couple of international events. And she's a poster child for Australia. She's always positive. She's very loved by the media, loved by the fans. I'm surprised. I don't really have a good answer for you. I don't know. It's one of the questions I know Coach Graf decently, having covered them for a couple of years now. It's one of the questions I'm going to ask is why Phillips didn't make the roster.
And it's ironic that when she didn't make it, when they first announced the team, if you went to the Opals webpage, there's a picture of Aaron Phillips taking a shot, and she got cut. So it's like, you know, that's not exactly good planning on your part, guys.
No, so, you might want to make sure the web people are together with the actual basketball operations people so things like that don't happen. But, yes, it was a complete surprise. I mean, she got punished, it sounds like, for something that wasn't fair.
So, now, looking at the rest of Group B, now, obviously, one of the teams that always is interesting in international play, but just isn't quite up to the level they've been in prior years, despite having some big names, is Brazil.
Yeah, they're a team that, on paper, if you look at them, I mean, any fan of the WNBA, wow, they're pretty talented. I mean, they got Izzy Castro Marquez, they have Erica D'Souza. I mean, their two studs are really, really good. And Adriana Pinto's pretty good. I mean, they have a talented group top to bottom, but they haven't performed well lately. Maybe this is the one they'll break out and do well, and we'll see. But their pre-exhibition games have not been stellar so far. So we'll see what happens. But they're a team that could be dangerous. I mean, that whole – you said it. That Group B is tough top to bottom. I mean, Australia and Russia obviously are the cream of the crop, but – Brazil's pretty good with those two. France has always been competitive. They were good at the World Championships 2 years ago. Britain's in its first Olympics, but they got a coach who's been to four with four different teams in Tom Maher. So they have a coach who knows how to win some games and sneak some victories out. And as I said, you can never count against home field or home court advantage. There's going to be a lot of screaming Brits there cheering on their old team. So they're pretty good in Canada. They had a surprising run in the Worlds in 2010, and they just qualified a couple weeks ago for their first Olympics since 2000. They have, as I'm sure you would know, they have a lot of former and current American college players on the team. So they're pretty good. So that top to bottom, I would not be shocked if you could see Australia and Russia as the top two. But at the next third and fourth place teams, those are going to be some real dogfights.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a number of players that people should keep an eye on those other teams. There's players that have been in major colleges. There's been some strong mid-major players, especially. And, you know, even like Great Britain has, Leadham, who was a draft pick from the Connecticut Sun that didn't play Division I ball at all, but is a very strong player. And Canada, of course, has, Courtney Pilipaitis from Vermont. It was just put on a clinic in the game that qualified them. So there's definitely players that people will recognize on these other teams.
And there's also two young kids who are really, really good. Britain's got one. This girl who's she's my sleeper of the tournament. I'm actually doing something on her, a story in about a week and a half when I get over to Manchester for the exhibition game with the U.S. Tenth Agbenley, who is at Harvard, who didn't play this year, who's a McDonald's All-American. She's the first McDonald's All-American to play in the Ivy League. And she had to sit out for some NCAA issue. They ruled against her for some academic stuff. But she is something to watch. She's 6'4", talented. She had a great tournament for them in the when they've been playing these pre-exhibition games. She's going to be really, really good, and she's going to be, for the next 3 years, a phenomenal Ivy League player. I talked to their coach the other day, Kathy Delaney, who said she may be the best player she's ever coached, and she had a pretty good one in Allison Feaster. So she's going to be somebody to watch, and also Natalie Chumwa from Notre Dame's on Canada's team. So there's some pretty good young talent there. So fans out there who are watching games, it's not just about the U.S., who obviously if you like watching basketball, the U.S. is going to put on a lot of clinics as far as blowing teams out, as they've done for a while, but some of these other games that may be on at 9 in the morning, 11 in the morning on the East Coast, like the Great Britain versus Canada game or wherever it may be, you might recognize some of these faces that you've seen in the past couple years in college coming through against the teams up in Connecticut or wherever you may be that have some good young talent that could put on a pretty good show.
Absolutely, and I think you're right. And the biggest thing, like you said at the very beginning of this, as we touched on, there is nothing like when they put on that uniform, you've got the crowds that are cheering for their countries and the flags waving and the spectacle of what it is. I've never had the good fortune of being able to see it in person. But even just, I just live to watch it on television and all. I love watching things like the Olympic Games and especially something like this where you have, the close quarters of a basketball court where you can hear things amplified that much more.
Oh, yeah, and call me a sap, but there's something kind of neat. At the beginning of every game, they play the two national anthems. And obviously you hear the U.S. anthem a lot, and I know and it's our anthem and it's great. But to see and hear some of these other anthems and the pride that some of these fans have and the players have, it's special. It's really, really special. And they sing along to it. You hear these, like, foreign chants that like, teams have as far as, like, for defense and stuff. It's something to watch, man. It's exciting. I could sit there, and I had the pleasure of sitting there and listening and taking in the atmosphere, and it's just something really, really special.
Well, Doug, I want to wish you have a wonderful time. I'll look forward to reading your pieces. As we always say with Doug, your best bet to find the things that Doug writes is to follow him on Twitter at Doug Feinberg because, his stuff appears in so many different periodicals and online websites throughout the country. And, whenever we get a chance to talk to Doug, it's always a pleasure. So thank you very much for taking the time to preview the Olympics with me, Doug.
Dave, my pleasure, man. And, I'd be foolish not to give you a prediction for the Olympics. And if I didn't pick the U.S., I'd be really a fool. Because they just won the 33 straight games, and they're such a dominant favorite to win this again. But I think it's going to be really exciting to see who's the team that they're going to play against in the gold medal game. And I think that's going to be something really special. And if it's Australia again, it'll probably be a good game, better than it was in 2008. But as I said, once they put that uniform on representing their country, anything can happen on any given night.
Just for old time's sake, can we get Lauren to pull out Candace's weave or something?
I'll mention that to her when I see her in a couple weeks.
Doug, safe travels and enjoy.
Thanks, pal.